Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Uptober. That's right, we are officially Uptober. The price of Bitcoin has changed significantly since I started taking my notes this morning. We're above 67, almost about to hit 68 today. So let's go. This is episode 41 of the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces. I am Coleman, and I will be your host today. And I have the lovely Lisa Huff on the panel with me this morning. So I want to take a moment and say, good morning, ma'am. How are you doing?
Good morning, guys.
Don't be shy, Lisa. I know you have more to say than that.
Oh, Coleman. So proud of you guys for everything that y'all are doing and organizing out in North Carolina. No, I'm good. I'm just actually in my closet putting some stuff in a suitcase to head to Santa Monica Bitcoin Week with my friend Dom Bay and Mags and Christine Cranley and all sorts of other good people. So if anybody's going to be in Santa Monica, please send me a DM. Let me know. Love to see you.
That's awesome. I hope you have a fun time and I hope it's a great conference. I hope you guys do well there.
It's going to be good. Just, you know, talking about Bitcoin. What could be bad about that?
Now, there's nothing bad about talking about Bitcoin and hanging out with fellow Bitcoiners. It's a pretty unique club, and it's a fun club to be a part of.
Yeah, and hey, shout out to people that are thinking about getting married. If you are a Bitcoiner and you're marrying a Bitcoiner, please invite me to the wedding. I went to my first Bitcoin-only wedding this weekend. It was a blast. We need more of those. We need Bitcoin babies. No pressure.
Yeah, I'm going to call out Natalie Brunell and Sam Callahan. Where was our invite? I'm hurt, but I'm disappointed. I'm just joking. I think that's who you're referencing, correct, Lisa?
It is, but it, you know what? There weren't that many people there. When it was all said and done, I was really like so touched that they invited Ella and I. But we are in a Bitcoin book club with Natalie. So I think our book club made the cut. I was very grateful to be able to, like I said, to be at my first Bitcoin-only wedding. It was a blast.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah, and from the pictures everyone's been posting over the weekend, it looks like it was a great wedding. And sometimes that's the best, to have a small wedding, as someone who's been married and had a medium-sized wedding. If you have too many people, you don't really get to enjoy the day. You're constantly talking, you're paying for all this food, and you don't ever get to enjoy it. So anybody who's thinking about getting married, I definitely recommend keeping it small. Otherwise, you won't have much fun during the day. But before we start really rolling in today's topics, I want to make sure everyone understands the reason why we do this every weekday, Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern. And that's to make sure that we show the people and the world what Bitcoin can do for everyone, and that we don't need a large centralized government, and that our small little communities and this decentralized group can accomplish amazing things. And I think we're proving that right now with Operation Gabriel in North Carolina. We're going out there. We have more guys that just left again today. I believe Jordan and Mike Hobart are out there with Shane Hazel. So again, we're making a big impact over there, and we're talking to everybody. Make sure we're helping out. If you haven't seen it, or this is your first time hearing about Operation Gabriel, we have a link up in the nest. We're looking for donations still to help resupply and help everyone that's been affected in that area. I want to give a huge thank you to all of you. We've raised over $115,000. A majority of that coming in Bitcoin. So again, thank you. Y'all give yourself a pat on the back. And again, everyone's in a different financial situation. If you're not able to donate sats or fiat, please just go ahead and give us a retweet on that link and help us spread that message. I want to give a huge shout out to Guy Swan, Walker, and Marty Bent for mentioning us on their shows. Again, just making everybody aware of what we're doing means a lot to us and helps us spread our message. So I want to thank everybody. And if you're first time listening to us, or you've been listening in the shadows and didn't really want to reach out, send us a message. We have over 600 veterans and we're constantly growing. And so we'll point you in the right direction. We'll answer any questions you may have about helping out North Carolina or just with Bitcoin in general. So please follow the Bitcoin handle and send us a message if you have any questions. But also want to welcome to the stage AC, Gabe Lord, and E. Omar. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Morning.
Well, let's go ahead and start diving into some of the big topics. I've been wanting to talk about the conflicts going around the world for the last couple of days, but we've just had so many great speakers on the show. We haven't had a lot of time to hit on what's going on. So I definitely want to cover some things that are going on with North Korea. And Yomar, I would love to have you give us some of your insight on that. But before we dive into that, again, I want to give an update with Operation Gabriel and what exactly we're doing. So Gabe Lord, if you don't mind, do you mind sharing some insight of the most recent efforts we're doing over there?
Yeah, absolutely. It's like you said, we've got a handful of guys on the ground up there right now. We've had a presence there in one way or another since going up there on, was that the 3rd or the 4th? Establishing communications, that's still continuing to take place. We're putting a little bit of pressure on Elon Musk to expedite some Starlink shipments that we've requested. I know he's been a little bit busy catching rocket ships with optics, which is amazing. But hopefully he'll catch our messages and speed up that process just a little bit. But it's going really well. We've, again, the Starlink, the mesh tastics, building out the network. We're also coordinating logistics efforts for supplies. We've got our eyes out on a couple of Connex-style storage containers. At this moment, we're operating out of a lot of temporary storage solutions, and so we're looking for something a little bit more securable. So if anybody has any connections with those metal-type storage containers, you may see them on trains as they're going by, shipping containers on the ships. If anybody has a connection on any of those, there are reutilization programs and salvage programs that we're researching right now through the Defense Logistics Agency. But if you've got a direct line, let us know. We could use some support on that too. But yeah, it's going well. Something I do just want to address is we continue to see rumors popping up of the potential for violence to emerge out there. And the latest one was, it was overblown. There was an incident of one local person who, remember, these people are under a significant amount of stress. You know, many of them have lost everything. But one local person made a threat to a FEMA worker. And then next thing we saw was in social media and people coming to us with questions asking about militia activity, people getting riled up in groups. And we've seen no evidence of that happening. So we just want to encourage everybody to maintain a level head, go based on facts. So let's all be like a bunch of little Fonzies and let's be cool. And we're going to maintain focus on serving the people that need it and not being distracted by things that are going to take away from that. So. Yeah, bottom line, things are going well. We're going to see if we can get a live stream set up at some point this week from the guys on the ground up there. So keep your eyes out for that. And contributions are still needed. And we're happy to have any discussions from potential corporate sponsors that want to jump in and really give to this mission. The longer we're there, the more we realize it's going to take a long time. And it's not unexpected that it's kind of fallen out of the headlines. We're not hearing as much about it, but I can assure you that for the people that are there, it is still very real and the needs are still very demanding and it's going to be a long journey. So, it's about all that I got and I'll entertain any questions that anyone has.
No, thank you for going over that. Yeah. And it is very important that we pay attention to still what's going on over there. We have, as a society, a very short attention span, and we move from, you know, the new headline to new headline really quick and forget about what happened less than 2 weeks ago. So it's really important that we maintain our vigilance and making sure everyone's aware of what's going on. Because again, I would love for everyone to be back to normal up there by this weekend, but that's just, it's never going to happen. There was so much infrastructure damage, so many people lost everything. It's going to take quite a few months for us to help them. So please make sure you continue to spread our message, show the world what Bitcoiners and Bitcoin can do to help everyone. And we do not need large government agencies coming in and trying to take over, because there's just too much red tape. They're inefficient. Everybody that's a veteran can tell you, anyone that's worked with the government can tell you, it's extremely slow. There's 10 people per job, and they all have to get permission with each other to get something done. And so it's just extremely slow. So let's show them what Bitcoin can do. So I'd like to start picking Eomer's ear a little bit of going what's going on in the world in terms of Israel. We just sent over a bunch of THAAD missile systems to help them as Israel's armory is getting depleted during this conflict. They're expecting a large retaliation against Iran for the attack Iran did on them about a week ago. And they expect Iran's response to be large and involve the United States directly. Also with North Korea. North Korea and South Korea are having a little turmoil right now. And so I'd love to just kind of go over everything. I don't want to spend the whole show on it because there's a lot of things I still want to cover, but this definitely deserves some attention. So Eomer, if you don't, or I'm just going to pass it over to you and just kind of let you go over everything. That's okay.
Sure. I mean, I'll cover what I know or what I think, I guess I should say. But I think like North Korea has been like kind of, they've been trying to rope North Korea into like the Ukraine story, I think, for a while. I think part of it is like people aren't buying enough, or at least like the American right isn't buying the Russia boogeyman story. So they're hoping, I think, that they'll buy the North Korea boogeyman story. I don't know how much of that will actually stick. You know, there's been talks of like Korean weapons and stuff in Ukraine and Korean this in Ukraine. So now they're saying Korean troops in Ukraine. But from what I saw, it was coming from Zelensky, you know, to say he's got a, you know, some vested interest in making a bigger boogeyman is a bit of an understatement, right? So I don't know like how true that is. I do think there is like coordination in a way, like the, I don't know if you guys saw, they like blew up some roads and stuff. Doesn't really change anything strategically. It's just kind of like a show, right? But if any of you guys like read my articles, one of the more recent ones was on the supply chain shortages that we're facing. I wrote about this actually back in January. And then I wrote about an update to it more recently within like the past month or two, I think.
Supply chain shortages as into what? With the military?
Yes, with our like the military industrial complex coming up short. I'll just open it and because I don't remember all the numbers offhand. But generally, like the context I wrote for this one was mostly focused on our supplying like Israel with Ukraine like kind of kicking it off, and then like Israel like ramping up the need. So the initial article I wrote was looking at like a CSIS report. And that one said we could create about 240,000 like 155 shells a year, or a surge capacity of that, I'm sorry. And they were making 164. Now the DoD is reporting they're making 360,000. And then combined with NATO, it's about like 1.2 million, I think, that we're making. And that's compared to Russia, who's making 3 million, artillery shells a year. And then when you look at like the consumption of these shells, Ukraine, I think, requested like 10,000 a day or something like that. And they're only getting like 2,000, enough to fire like 2,000 a day. And then when you look at Israel, within the first 2 months, they fired 100,000 artillery shells. So at the time that was, you know, almost, was that like 2/3 of our production capacity. More recent reports were showing that they were using, munitions that they had stored from 1953, in terms of bomb productions, from what I saw, we make like 30,000 ish bombs a year. That's like the Mark 80 series, I think. So that's like the 500,000, 2,000 pound bombs. And then there's like the JDAM guidance systems on there, has I think 10 to 50,000 was the production range. The point of all this is like just Israel in the first few months used up like over a year's worth of production. And they've been going on and on, like all these bombs. I don't know if you guys have seen like the total tonnage of bombs, but it's like multiples of the tonnage equivalent of like Hiroshima. So, and that's just on Gaza, which is, for those that don't know, it's a very, very small plot of land. It's essentially been a prison for the past, you know, over a decade. And the important thing is that, like, they haven't completely demolished, like, Hamas, right? That was their stated goal. Hamas, on the October 7th anniversary, they were launching rockets again into, like, towards Tel Aviv. A few months before that, they showed that their underground munitions plants were still functional. They're still conducting, like, complex ambushes and stuff. And now we have, you know, Israel posturing against Lebanon. And, you know, the size of Lebanon compared to Gaza Strip is, like, you know, if you were to take, like, the munitions requirements for Gaza Strip, which still hasn't, like, equated to victory. Like, even their own generals are saying, like, you know, we won't be able to defeat Hamas there because it's, you know, an ideology. And, you know, if you look at, like, our coin doctrines and stuff, you'll get the idea why. But, you know, if you take the requirements for Gaza and you apply it to Lebanon, like, there's just not enough munitions to go around. And then Ukraine is still demanding, you know, more and more munitions. Like I said, they need like 10,000 a day. We're giving them 2,000 a day. And they're complaining that it's causing like three times as many casualties because they don't have the suppressive capabilities. So what I see North Korea is doing is saying, it's like a reminder, like, you know, we know you guys are stretched thin, but you have to be prepared for over here as well. And China also, you know, North Korea did that. China, I don't know if you guys saw, is doing some like live exercises in the, right off the coast of Taiwan. So there's a lot going on, and a lot of it, I think, is just a reminder that, you know, if you want to be the global superpower, you have to remember us too. And we just literally do not have the capabilities. We don't have the capabilities for what we're fighting right now, which is Ukraine and you know, the Israel you know, support that we're giving. As to the 100 or so troops that are attached to a THAAD system there, yeah, it's the same as we do with our troops all over the world. I wrote about this in my article, American Victory. They're tripwires, right? It's a, you know, we put them in harm's way so that when some adversary over there strikes Israel, there's the chance for them to get killed. And if they get killed, you know, these neocons that have been pushing for a war with Iran, they'll have their excuse, right? That's what I see that as. I don't see a couple THAAD platforms. I don't know how many THAAD platforms they deployed, but I don't see it doing like tactically that much, just given like the scope of the failure of the Iron Dome and the other two systems, the Arrow and Sling. I don't see like a few of our things being out there, you know, changing what will happen on the ground. I see it more as a, you know, you better be careful, you'll hit us, and then, you know, we'll have all the excuses we need to get into this wider war. But again, I think a lot of this is posturing. I don't think we are in a position to engage in this wider war. I don't think like the, I think there, I would imagine there's a bit of a conflict between like the political side and the military side. Just because like when you look at the numbers of our production and like what's being taxed on us, supply wise, it just doesn't seem feasible that we would want to escalate anything. Plus, like the fact that Iran, like all we can do is strike it. We can't ever invade Iran. You know, its borders are mountains. It'd be like invading over the Rocky Mountains. So,
do you think that's why they might be trying to make a last ditch effort right now to try and escalate things, because they know that they can't sustain this over the coming months or even another year?
Yeah, I think I wrote about it a little like right when, like as it was happening with the assassination of Nasrallah, that I think part of that was like a bluff, almost like a let's go big and just try to, you know, in their minds, cut the head off the snake so that we can stop this before it gets going, because, you know, a ground like in 2006 when they invaded Lebanon, you know, it's largely regarded as a defeat for Israel, and Lebanon or Hezbollah is just significantly more powerful than they were back then. So to think it would go any better for them this time around, I don't think anybody like actually in the Israeli command thinks that. So I think that the massive strike in Beirut to kill Nasrallah was an attempt of like almost like a bluff, like let's show how strong we are quick, because you know, quick and to the point would be better for them, I think, than something long and drawn out. And that's not even factoring in like the economic factors for Israel, like how much it's costing them to wage this war and can keep it going. That's a whole nother discussion.
But it's also interesting you say that, because the I forget what organization, but they downgraded Israel's credit worthiness because of the war and how expensive it is. And I believe last month there was an article that came out that Israel is trying to remove its largest fiat note in circulation and try to limit the amount of gold and silver its citizens can have. So if I'm reading between the lines of that, it tells me that they're not financially sound and that they're hemorrhaging money for this war, so they do need it to be over quick. And so maybe that's why they're trying to push for large escalations or large tactics, just to try and make this over quick.
Yeah, and I think there's also like a conflict, right? There's a conflict between like what's best for, you know, like Israel and the Israelis and what's best for Netanyahu, right? Because he is kind of on the chopping block. So, you know, if he, the fact that October 7th happened and there was like a leak today, something that like pointed more fingers at Netanyahu's, accountability or responsibility for like it happening the way it happened. I didn't read the whole thing, but I saw an article come through. But you know, he faces a lot of opposition. He was facing a lot of opposition before October 7th happened. So as the dust settles and people really settle down and start looking over like what actually happened and the fact that, you know, I don't know if you guys follow the gray zone at all, but like they did a lot of reporting on how the IDF, enacted the Hannibal directive, where they fire upon, they basically try to kill the hostage takers and the hostages, because it's too, in their minds, too expensive to negotiate for the hostages back. So I think as that gets more to the surface, and which will probably happen when like the conflict slows down, people will be looking for, figuratively, maybe literally, like Netanyahu's head. And he's still like on the hook for like some corruption charges and stuff. So for him, like he's looking for some like resounding victory so that he can be like a hero. But I think he's just digging, his nation deeper and deeper into the hole. I know as Americans, we're kind of isolated from it, but they're becoming a more and more of a global pariah state. Some European countries are talking about different levels of embargoes. I think Spain's calling for an end of the free trade agreement with Israel. So there's a lot of like follow-up consequences that I think will end up happening. So I think Netanyahu's kind of doomed himself and is trying to fight his way out of it, which is just going to further exasperate the issue for them. And then, like I said, on the global stage for Americans, we're putting my personal opinion is like our empire is collapsing either way, but we're accelerating it by overstretching ourselves. And it's pretty typical of like empires. They usually don't go peacefully into the night. They usually try to fight it out. And it usually makes it worse for the empire, like the home nation of the empire. So in my opinion, the best thing for us to do is to, stop, lick our wounds, try to mend the ties with the nations that we've wronged, and try to smoothly transition into what I think is next, which is like a multipolar world, instead of like going into it hot and violently, which could end catastrophically for us. And I could post, I'll drop a few articles in the pill there, or if you want, I could do it in the nest, that kind of cover some of these topics.
Yeah, if you don't mind, if you could post it in the nest, that'd be perfect. Gabe, sure. I see your hand up. Do you have a question?
Yeah, first of all, thank you, EMR, for that, for those excellent observations. It's just, man, I love hearing your breakdown of these things. It just makes perfect sense. And you brought up something that I just want to echo with everyone, and that is, you mentioned how our intervention, you know, whether or not it's good for Israel or if it's designed to be good for Netanyahu. And that's an important distinction, I think it is for us to recognize, is that the people of a nation and the government of a nation are not the same thing. And that goes for Israel. That goes for us. And I think it's something that people tend to kind of group themselves with, as they say, well, you know, the U.S. is supporting this country, or the U.S. is involved in this country. And it's not the American people that are involved in that. And I can assure you that what governments are doing with their interventions in other nations, they're not doing it for the people that live in the country that they represent. And so we kind of get looped into these emotional ties and these pressures to endorse and to support and to wave flags and to do all these things, but it's not for our benefit. I can guarantee you that the USG is not involved over there for the benefit of the people of our country in which we live. And I can assure you that whatever country you're living in right now, the things that your government is doing with other governments, it's between those governments. It's not for you. It's not for the benefit of our people or for their people. And I think it's just an important distinction to us to make, especially when we're talking about the veteran population. Because something that I, and I'm sure many of us, have encountered are situations where people say, well, how can you be a Bitcoiner when you served the military, when you were a part of that? And the fact is that many of us have a much more clear perspective on that distinction between a people and the people's government. Many of us have a pretty clear perspective on that. And I think that it's a perspective that more and more people, whether they have served or not, are beginning to adopt and to recognize that there is a distinction, there is a separation. The government and the people, they're not the same thing. And I think it's just important for us to continue educating people and to continue sharing that perspective with other people. Because the more of us that recognize that, the better off I believe all of us will be.
Well said, dude. And I just want to add, I posted the article up to the NASA, two articles. I did one on my most recent one on the supply chain, and then one about what I call American victory. And I just want to say, what I say in that article, in short, Americans don't understand what victory is for us, right? We've been deceived into thinking our bombs, striking somewhere is some sort of victory for us. Our F-35s flying are a victory for us. In reality, we have to think, what is victory for the American people? And to me, victory for us is the preservation of American lives, liberty, and property. And if you look at our foreign policy, it jeopardizes each one of those, right? We put our lives in the risk, like we're doing right now, by placing our THAAD systems with American troops attached in Israel. We're putting American lives at risk. That's putting our money at risk, right? Our property, our taxes are paying for all these troops everywhere in the world. And then our liberty, if we look at what happened, not to get down the rabbit hole, but if you look at what followed after 9/11 was something like the Patriot Act, right? And that's a huge infringement on our rights, right? So that all three of the things that we should be holding dear, the things that we should actually fight for, are being sacrificed, on behalf of the military-industrial complex and, whatever political machinations our so-called leaders have. In the end of the day, we're losing for it. So I go into more details in the article, so I won't get too long going into here, but yeah.
No, I like that. Thank you, Yomar. I see we have Wade, Bitcoin Kearney, Texas Toast up here. I'd like to start wrapping up this discussion, move on to other thing, guys. So if you have some questions, let's go ahead and make them quick. But whoever wants to go first.
Yeah, thanks, Coleman. I just posted a couple of things on the Nest, just the recent GAO report on the F-35s at 50% readiness, and several of the U.S. Navy submarine programs being effectively 50% readiness, because we only have two dockyards that can service the entire fleet. And we're watching the entire readiness of the Department of Defense collapse right before our eyes. We don't have the ability to maintain what we have, much less produce anything more. So just put that down on the pill for everyone.
Bitcoin Kearney, you got a question, sir?
Yeah, kind of a comment and a question. Just hopefully I'll make it quick. Still early for me out here. But I just am so happy to hear all you guys speak the way you do. I I was in high school during 9/11, and I had a lot of guys go overseas. I wasn't in the service, but a lot of my buddies, and I kind of became, I guess, like a conscious human being around 2008 or seven, Ron Paul's run. And you guys sound exactly like him. And I love that, dude. And I think it's very telling that the only anti-war candidate received more campaign contributions than from military veterans and active servicemen than all other candidates combined. It says a lot. And I wish you guys, you're point of view and your voice could be heard like by the masses. So anyway, that's awesome. Awesome to hear you guys.
Oh, thank you, Declan Kearney. And thank you, Wade. You jumped down before I had a chance to thank you for that. But you're right. And we have this saying, like, Bitcoin fixes this. Bitcoin does fix this corruption and the endless wars, because you're not able to print Bitcoin to fund this. You need to go to the public and get funding. And so it's important that we continue to push our message to help prevent the overreach and the endless wars, the needless suffering that they're causing. But I'd like to go ahead and start rolling into some other topics today. And one of the first things I want to kind to clarify, everyone is losing their mind. Larry Fink gave his third quarter update, and people really mistook what he had to say in that report. I just want to make sure everyone understands. They are quoting that Larry Fink stated Bitcoin would become as big as the housing market in the United States, which is $50 trillion. I went through his notes to kind of find out, because I don't like to talk about things without verifying. People have read this with this story, and it's not factual. He didn't say that would be as large as the housing market. He said it had similarities to the housing market, but nowhere did he say that it was become a $50 trillion asset. So I just want to make sure everybody understands that. But what he did say, which I think is very interesting, is it's, as we all know, Bitcoin is an asset class in itself. He stressed the importance that it doesn't matter which political candidate wins, whether it's Harris or Trump, Bitcoin is still going to thrive. And it doesn't matter. They're not going to be able to beat it. And he sees with BlackRock broad demand for a market with Bitcoin. So I just want to talk on that and just make sure everybody understood. Larry Fink does not think it's going to be a $50 trillion asset yet, but he does see a large demand. So I just wanted to make sure everyone understood. And I put a link up in the Nest where I found that article. I think Alex Thorne did some digging and posted the actual transcript from what he had said. If anybody wanted to talk on that or hit on anything I just said, feel free to jump up. Otherwise, I'm going to start moving over to the next story. Well, then we'll just roll right in. So Donald Trump, I guess, is being rumored to go on to Joe Rogan show, which I think is amazing. I think that all presidential candidates should be on a long format live podcast. If they want to come the best one, we do this Monday through Friday. We'll definitely consider going longer than an hour so we can talk to him. But Joe Rogan's, I guess, a good second best. And so I think that'd be great if Donald Trump went on there. But not to be outdone, Harris, during her media blitz, is trying to rally more male voters. So she said that she is interested in going on the Joe Rogan show as well. So I think it'd be great if both candidates went on there. I would wager to bet the Harris interview with Joe Rogan would probably be the most viewed Rogan podcast in history. And I don't think anything would come close to it, just because people want to hear her talk. And I think it would be an absolute disaster for her to do. If you've watched any of the last week of her media appearance, media blitz, she does not have a thought in her head. And I don't know how you could hide a 2 or 3 hour interview with Harris, with Joe Rogan, and kind of make her seem like a legitimate candidate. So we talked about this last week where we think they might be just kind of throwing her under the bus. This seems like one of those things. If they allow her to go with Joe Rogan, it seems like they're really throwing her under the bus. And so I definitely want to get y'all's thoughts on what it would look like if they allowed her to go on Rogan. We can't hear you, E. Omar.
Sorry, I double muted myself. I was just saying, I would love that. Like, I would love to see that after like 30 minutes. Like, I'd give her like 30 minutes of like, you know, talking points that she could probably remember. But like, as soon as like there's a tangent, if, you know, Rogan kind of bounces around sometimes. So like, if she doesn't have like a smooth line that she could follow, she's going to crumble. You know what I mean? So if he's like, oh, tell me about UFOs. Okay, now back to like housing. She'll just completely fall apart. And it'll be hilarious to watch. And, you know, Trump, I'm not a Trump fan, really. You know, I think he's got a ton of flaws. Is he better than Harris? Yes. Would he do better on Rogan? Yeah, I think so, just because he's, you know, he's kind of naturally funny and stuff. So, and I think I think Rogan would be a little bit friendlier to Trump than to Harris. You know, if they were both showing up, I think, you know, Rogan would probably try to keep it pretty professional, since they might be the future president, you know? But I think you're right. Like, you know, the American people deserve this. They deserve long form interviews that of substance, you know? I know she was on like some weird podcast not that long ago. I saw some clips from, but yeah, the debates are a fraud. It's a shame that people think that you can, like, that you should pick your president based off of like a 30-second answer. It's disgusting. If you want to get an idea of how disgusting, read like some of the constitutional debates or the Anti-Federalist Papers, and just see how like eloquently they spoke, and versus like our current politicians, and it'll make you more angry. Or at least it made me more angry. So,
and they used to do long format debates or speeches back then. So this really short speech or discussions is something that's relatively new.
Yeah, I think it's designed for ad space. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe that's like what they're trying to do, so they can have like these constant breaks, so they can get in some ads or something. I don't know. Or they think people won't watch. I don't know. But
yeah, it might definitely need something better. It might have to do with our attention span. You know, it'd be really tough probably to keep everybody entertained for 3 hours.
I mean, maybe, but I mean, look how long podcasts are, right? Like, I, you know, I don't know Rogan's viewership, but it's pretty high, and his podcasts are like hours long, sometimes talking about nonsense. So I'm pretty sure a lot of people would tune in for, you know, a several hour like debate of substance. You know, I think people tune out of the debates because they're not saying anything, right? Like, I have a plan of a plan, or, you know, we can be unburdened by what was been, or whatever their like talking points are, right? Like, they're not saying anything of substance. I think if it was something of substance, people would actually watch it, you know?
Yeah. And I would hope if they go on there, I do think it'll be good. And I would expect Rogan to ask some serious questions, and they're not even difficult ones. How are you going to fix the economy? How are you going to fix the issue of our debt? And get honest answers out of them. So I do think that she will do really bad in that interview if she does go on. And like Eomer said, the beginning part might be really strong for her, but once she starts getting follow-up questions or has to go back and forth, it's pretty evident she has no idea what she's talking about. And again, that's terrifying. If you're going to be someone in power, you should have clear thoughts, even if it's something that nobody agrees with. But you want to implement it, stick to your guns and just make sure everybody's aware of your policy. And only maybe in the last couple of days have I seen any of her policies really come out. And up until this point, no one's really known. So it's very terrifying that we're going into this election and you have no idea what she would to do. And so I think that point needs to get across, and everybody should be demanding answers. She did, I guess, a town hall for crypto yesterday. And to me, again, this is just, it's very frustrating. And I'm going to call it what it is. Her policy was extremely racist. And racism being, it was designed to help Black males. Now, if you read this article, I want you, and if you're doubting that you don't believe it's racist, I want you to just change everywhere where she says a Black male and put in a white male, and then tell me if it is racist. And it doesn't matter the color or the ethnicity that she's singling out. Her policy was specific in what it wanted to do. So I put the link up in the nest. But what she wants to do is she wants to provide protect crypto investments so black men who invest know their money is safe. So that was the only thing that she talked about in her policy agenda that was related to crypto. Everything else was provide up to 1 million loans that are fully forgivable, up to $20,000 for black entrepreneurs. Support education, training, and mentorship programs that lead to good paying jobs for black men, including pathways to become teachers. Launch a national health initiative focused on the illnesses that disproportionately impact black men, and legalize recreational marijuana and create opportunities for black Americans to succeed in this new industry. So again, the reason I was stressing the word black is she did not have to have that in there. You could just remove that and her policy would apply to everybody. And so to me, it really rubbed me in a wrong way that they're doing this. And that no one's calling them out on this BS. So if anybody up here wants to mention on that or talk on that, please feel free to let her have it.
I think that, like, you have to know the other side, how they view all that. They actually think that's a good thing. Like, people like my sister, she has two master's degrees. And part of that training is like, these people have been held down and equity, and we need to help them up, which, as you said, is the most racist thing to assume that someone else needs more help than anybody else because of the color of their skin. But the other thing you said a minute ago about we don't know any of her policies, again, they want that. Back to my sister, she's not voting for Kamala. She's voting for the machine around Kamala. So the less we know about Kamala's point of views, the better it is, because then they can just say, yeah, but we trust that machine more than angry orange man tweets. And in regard to the podcast thing also a minute ago, Trump was on Theo Vaughn and Andrew Schultz podcast. And I think it was honestly the best he's ever come across on both of those. They were both over an hour long. And he just seemed like a genuine, real dude, funny, like just honestly like a stand-up comedian. His timing and his one-liners and facial expressions were on point. One last thing. I don't know if anybody's heard of Simon Dixon's latest kind of ideas about what's going on, but like with the Kamala panic, it seems like how they're, I don't know if they're throwing her under the bus or just their internal polling is such shit, but he thinks that maybe Trump has been selected by Israel and like he's going to win either way. And what that will end up in is ending the war in Ukraine, moving those resources to war with Iran at Israel's behest. And the thing that he kind of screwed up was after that assassination attempt, blaming it on Iran. And then he literally said, I don't know if you guys heard, but he said, if they end up being successful and they do kill me, make sure you go to war with Iran. So it's kind of like he put himself in a corner where if he either needs to go to war with Iran or they're going to kill him and make it look like Iran. And then we're going to war with Iran. I don't know what you guys think.
I didn't see that Simon Dixon, where he said Trump was chosen by Israel. That's a very interesting take. I agree that Israel has a lot of influence and has a lot of blackmail against our leaders in power. So that's really interesting. I'm gonna, if you could, Bitcoin Carney, if you could have the link, put that up in the nest. But I find that very interesting. It is something definitely to consider. But to touch on what Trump had said about go to war with Iran, Biden came out yesterday and said the same thing. So this kind of makes you wonder. But he had said that if something were to happen to Trump, that they would declare it as an act of war and retaliate against Iran. So just things that you need to be a pay. Go ahead, Yomar.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I actually wrote back when Vance was selected as the VP candidate. I'm posted in the nest too. I actually wrote, like, when I was looking at his policies, with Trump, it wasn't as clear, but when I looked at Vance, it was like pretty clear that he wanted to end Ukraine, because he actually goes, like, he's on record a few times saying, like, we don't have enough funds, or we don't have enough supply to, you know, fund Ukraine and Israel and Taiwan. So it's very clear when you examine his policies that he wants to end Ukraine so that he can better support, you know, he points to Taiwan, but I think the real elephant in the room, like, and we can see it with like the rhetoric on Iran, was that he wants to better position them, the United States, for a war with Iran. I don't think that that's necessarily wrong. I don't know about like Israel choosing who wins. I honestly think Trump's a little bit more dangerous for Israel because Trump has an ego that I think is his primary driving force. And, if Netanyahu were to like disrespect Trump the way that he does to Biden, I think Trump would turn on him and it would carry a large portion of the Republican Party with him. So I don't know about them choosing Trump. I think Trump is a little bit, I think he's in the pocket right now, but there is like a bit of danger with a Trump presidency that isn't there with somebody that's very well in the machine, like Kamala Harris. So that's my thoughts on like who would be better for Israel. I think they both are going to do what Israel wants, but I think with Trump, there's at least a chance that he'll get upset and not. I don't think that exists with Kamala Harris. But in terms of like the war trade, I 100% agree that, the plan is to end Ukraine, not because not because of any like humanitarian things. It's just because, you know, like I pointed out in the other articles, like we have supply issues and the one that is paying, Ukraine doesn't have an AIPAC, right? So AIPAC's paying a lot of money for our support and they're mad that Ukraine's getting some of the bombs that they want. So that's the way I look at it.
Thank you for that, sir. So just really quick, while I have all of your attention, I want to give a shout out to our partners. I'm going to thank you. Black Sheep Ammo, restock your ammo supplies at blacksheepammo.com. Solo Satoshi, open source Bitcoin mining at solosatoshi.com. Paladin Tower Tactics, professional firearms training, paladintowertactics.com. And Punch Plate, I see you guys in the audience. Good morning. Stamp your seed phrase on a metal plate at punchplate.com. Also want to make sure we're hitting on this every day. Bitcoin Alaska, July 5th and 6th. Highly recommend getting there early, coming in around the 1st, so you can enjoy the events, pre-events on the 2nd. Stay till about the 7th. It's going to be an amazing time. If y'all haven't been to Alaska in the summer, it is gorgeous. Juneau is just, I've never been to Juneau, but from what I've seen in the pictures, it looks amazing. The weather is going to be amazing. So I'm really looking forward to that. Wade is the one that's putting on this conference and it just sounds amazing. The biggest thing he stressed though is your lodging. That's going to be the first thing to book up. So if you know that you want to go, definitely encourage you to go out there and start booking your hotel rooms. So Bitcoin Alaska conference is the 5th and the 6th, but definitely get there early, spend some time, explore, and stay a little later. So the 1st to the 7th. If you have any questions, you can send us some questions. You can reach out to us at the Bitcoin Veterans handle, or you can reach out to me. I'll be more than happy to answer any questions you have. One other major topic that came out over the last 48 hours, I definitely want to spend some time on before we wrap up the show, was a DOD report that was released. It was released on the 27th of last month, but it's just a lot of light is getting shone on it right now. I believe that's due to Ron Paul tweeting about it. And in the report, the DOD is allowing the military to use lethal force against U.S. civilians. So it specifically says assistance in responding with assets with potential for lethality or any situation in which it is reasonably foreseeable that providing the requested assistance may involve the use of force that is likely to result in lethal force, including death. It includes all support to civilian law enforcement officials in situations where confrontation between civilian law enforcement and civilian individuals or a group of civilians is reasonably anticipated. So I think that is big news that they're allowing the use of lethal force to be applied to citizens from the military. I also think it's concerning, especially given the reports from the FBI whistleblower last month when he was speaking in front of Congress. I forget his name, but he had mentioned you need to make sure you stock up on food, create a community, make sure you arm yourself. And then the other one was a guest on the Sean Ryan show, Kash Patel. He specifically went on there and said that the DOD and the government will do anything to maintain power. So if anybody up here on the panel wants to talk about that report or their thoughts on it, I'd love to hear your intakes on it or your takes on it.
Coleman, you are the most in the know guy. Thank you for always being so prepared for the show. I haven't heard about this latest report, but I loved our space on what to get when you are prepping and what to have on hand. I think maybe we can do another one in, when you're up for it, or I'm going to host a space and I put together a list. I'm going to share it as a Google Doc, just based on all of our conversations and then input that other folks have shared in DMs.
Well, thank you for that, Lisa. I try and make sure we bring some big topics to the show, things that might have fallen through the wayside. As for another space about prepping and making sure you're ready, you let us know when you want to do it and we can get that done. But I do think, and I'm not trying to, I don't want to scare anybody with this or put fear, but it's definitely, it's something that we need to be talking about and making sure everyone's aware of what's going on. And the fact that it's been released and put into writing, I think, is very substantial. So EMRAC, do you guys, or Bitcoin Carney, do you guys have anything you want to add to that?
I didn't see the report either. But that's pretty wild. Like that they would spell out occasions when U.S. forces can engage, civilians. And did it specify like domestically, like within it stated like in the United States, or did it mean like overseas, or did it
get? No, it stated domestically. I downloaded the file. Actually, Gabe was the one that showed me this morning. I'll try, if you keep talking, Omar, I'll go through and I'll post it through.
Sure. I think that's pretty crazy. And like, I think something that we have to like be more aware of is the way like the, and I don't know if it's coordinated, I think it kind of points to being coordinated, but the way they'll seesaw us, right? Like they'll seesaw us, so like they get support from both sides for something that generally we would just never support, right? And I think I might have mentioned this before, but like we saw during like the BLM riots and stuff, we saw a lot of people on the right wing like calling for, high levels of like violence and to put these down, and including like calling in like, you know, some people are advocating for like military involvement and stuff like that. And I don't think it actually got to that point and during that. But then during January 6th, there was a lot of that like, from the other side, from the left, you know, they're saying like, we have to, you know, punish these people. We have to, this kind of speech is dangerous. You know, they were labeled like insurrectionalists, where most of them are, you know, if you watch the videos, and just trespassing. But it kind of solidifies that government power to, persecute people that, are generally doing things that are protected. Obviously like rioting and burning stuff down isn't protected. If you showed up to January 6th with like zip ties trying to kidnap people, yeah, you're probably a bad actor there. But for the most part, protests, including protests in government buildings, at worst is like a trespass, maybe a disorderly conduct, but it's not insurrection. And I think that like the fact that we got some support for like heavy-handed government from the right and then from the left, and then there's this continued like narrative that, I know a couple years ago they were talking about like, right wingers being a threat. I think they threatened, said they're domestic terrorists or something like that. That narrative is, very dangerous, and it's a threat to liberty. And, I think whenever the government is looking for more power, we should just reject it. That should be your knee-jerk reaction, is to reject it, even if it's something that gets you fired up, right? They're never going to like find like the case that's kind of in the middle to try to fire you up. They're going to find something that like one side hates, and they'll use that to gain some power. And then they'll find something the other side hates, and they'll use that to solidify that power. And they'll just keep doing that, and they inches further and further on our rights. And we got to, so anytime you like see them like doing something like that, like with this document, you know, if they're talking about that, you know, that it just has to be like rejected right off the bat. And I think I don't remember if it was like verified or not, but Trump was talking about at some point during his last presidency using troops and stuff. And, you know, it was like widely criticized. But, you know, it planted that seed. And, you know, now we have a Democrat president in there that's apparently authorizing similar stuff. So I don't know if anybody else has anything. I don't want to ramble too much as Coleman's searching there. And
I find it interesting that they'd even bother to write it down. Like, they've been doing this. So, like, maybe they're just thinking they're going to have to do it in a more voluminous way. Like, okay, we're going to be taking out thousands now, so we need some kind of like doctrine once we declare these people enemy combatants or whatever. It seems like a big step for sure.
I don't know if there's like any like I don't know how that fits within like the framework of the Constitution, even though like how you can justify this.
All right, so I just posted it into the Nest. I couldn't get the direct link working on my end, so I apologize. But I put the DoD directive and the number file up there. But then I posted underneath it the exact verbiage of what's going on with it. Okay. And so, it's the most concerning part is that it came out on the 27th. Of September. So it's very recent. It's not something that's been sitting on the back burner or waiting for. So you can take that however you'd like. We had some conversations in the, in different chats about what was going on. And, you know, they're not saying that it's imminent or that they will use it, but it's just that it's there and that it's effective immediately. I think that was the main wording that was very concerning for us. So again, not trying to spread fear or anything, but just making sure people are aware. And I apologize, Ymar, I missed most of what you were saying about it.
No worries. The short answer of what I was saying is that anytime the government tries to gather more power, reject it is the safest bet. I mentioned how like BLM, they got like a little bit of support from the right to use more force against U.S. citizens. And then with January 6th, they got that support from the left, and it just solidifies government power. And at the end of the day, it is used against everybody, regardless of your political affiliation. So the safest bet, even if it's something that you have like a knee-jerk hate reaction to, is to reject the government having power.
Yes, because there's nothing more permanent than a temporary government program. But I think, guys, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up right here. We're going to end the show on this, try and keeping the shows directly to an hour. I do want to thank everybody who participated up here. Lisa, Yomar, Bitcoin Kern, AC, Gabe Lord, who jumped off earlier. I really appreciate you guys coming up here and helping out. Jacob, for doing everything in the background. And then everybody in the audience. I see Jordan, Hunter, Way, Death and Bitcoin, LBN every single morning, Chivas, ZMAC, First Financial M, 9 Bitcoin. I can't name all of you. There's too many, but I do want to say that I see you all every day, and it does mean a lot, and it makes my job a lot easier knowing you guys are tuning in. You guys and girls, sorry, are tuning in and listening. And I always appreciate comments. So if you have anything you want to let us know, reach out to me directly, and we'll cover it. That's how we did the Bitcoin Prepper space a couple weeks ago. Lisa just asked if we could, and it was done. So if you want to see a specific show, let us know. We're happy to help. We will not be doing a Bitcoin veteran live space today. It'll be postponed, but I have got confirmation next Tuesday we'll be doing it again. Just because we have our guys on the ground. We have Shane and Mike are actually in North Carolina today. And those are the hosts normally. So we're taking this week off, but we'll be doing it next week. Make sure you go out there, spread our message, let everybody know what we're doing with Operation Gabriel. Again, everyone's financial situation is different. You don't have to donate sats or fiat, but we would appreciate it. It takes no money, no effort to just go ahead and retweet that link so we can get our message out there. Again, we have a tendency to have a short attention span. And unfortunately for everybody affected, this isn't going to get fixed by the weekend. It's going to be several months. before they get back to a sense of normalcy. So let's go out there and make sure people don't forget what we're doing. But that's it. Again, thank you all. Go out there, have a fantastic day and crush it.